broadcasting from the Barthcade. Exciting. This is the Coin Rejects, episode 76. Woo! And we're back. I'm sitting around the actual Barthcade bar with my fellow rejects.
Ian.
I'm Jordan. We did this better when we weren't looking at each other. Thank you for coming down.
You know what's fucked up about this show is in the very first episode you said, and we're back. But from what?
Did I?
Hell.
An alternate.
Only one way to find out.
Yeah. An alternate
Everybody
reality.
Everybody go back and listen to the first episode.
It's the Halloween episode, so that was scary.
It's actually not the Halloween episode. This is the day after Halloween episode. Something like that.
Close enough.
It's going to be the week after Halloween. So
it's a whole season. It extends from August 1st to July 31st.
I like that. I like that a lot. So yeah, this will come out in November, but this is our Halloween show. So happy Halloween, everyone.
And boy, did we pick a great game to go with that theme.
Damn right. But first, you might want to visit us on the internet at coinrejects.com or on Instagram. We are coinrejects. On Twitter, we are Coin Rejects. You can send us an email at coinrejects@gmail.com, or you can send us a voicemail at
503-766-2263.
And next episode, we will be doing voicemails, emails, all that good stuff. So get them in now, and we will play them and answer them on the next episode. Send us some good topics. Send us some good questions. Send us some good arcade pickup stories or arcade horror stories, whatever you got. Send it in.
All right. And here's a thing I want to say. We have received some feedback from people about the new format who say things like, I don't like the new format. That's cool. But if you were going to say that, you have to say why you don't like the new format or what you preferred about the old format. If you simply say, I like one or the other, that does not give us enough information. So give us some fucking reasons.
We need some constructive criticism.
That's right.
Yeah, you probably didn't like the old format either. You just don't like anything, really. You just are fucking bitching at us because everybody else is tired of hearing you bitch all the time.
And we're so sorry that the format is not to your liking on this show for free with zero ads.
No refunds.
Indeed. So this is a game of the episode, which we actually got to play a real game for once in a very, not a very long time. When's the last time we did that?
We played Space Encounters last
Brandon.
Time.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago.
We only play real games now. We fucking turned the corner.
Only a couple episodes ago. So
the coiner.
So we are back in Jordan's arcade, and I got to pick the game because I won last time. And so Jordan recently, I think as he discussed on the last update episode, picked up a Sente cabinet, and he has not only Snake Pit and Chicken Shift, he has Jackson Jackson. And this is a game that I played at CAX. I discovered it there because I played some Sente games in the arcade. I definitely played Hat Trick in the arcade. I played Mini Golf in the arcade. I know that. Probably played Give Me a Break, but never played Snake Pit or Chicken Shift or Snacks and Jackson. And this game is just kind of bonkers when you first play it. It's we'll get into the gameplay, but yeah, that's the reason that I chose it is I think it was in some thread on Clove where somebody was selling a bunch of games, and one of the games was Snacks and Jackson, and you know, just some random thread, and you said something about getting the Snacks and Jackson. I was like, oh, the Barthcade needs a Snacks and Jackson. You're like, oh, I'm thinking the same thing. And
yeah, I didn't think they were that available, really. But I saw that one had sold, and I thought, oh, well, maybe this is something that I could have. It just seemed very rare to me that I was never going to come across one. But yeah.
I was excited when Jordan added this game, and so when it came my turn to pick the game, I just had to choose this one because
you had to.
It's super fun, and I wanted to play it. And I'm going to turn it over to Ian to describe the gameplay.
Okay, Snacks and Jackson is a game where you play Jackson DeBox. And Jackson DeBox is a clown who...
What's the last name?
Shit. That's what it says. It's even in the attract mode and everything. Where's the flyer? Snacks and Jackson is a unique game built around a clown who tries to eat his way through life without letting his nose break any windows. This is a game controlled by a trackball with a single button. And you look at Snacks and Jackson, Jackson DeBox, who is sitting at a table with a bib or a napkin tucked into his collar. And you use the trackball to move his head about. And his head stays connected to his body via his neck, which follows along. He sneezes, and his red rubber clown nose flies off of his face. And then food begins to appear through some holes in the sides, in the walls of the room he's in, I should say. This is a sort of 3D perspective game, which doesn't make a lot of sense, really, but is what it is. There are windows behind Jackson, and then he's sitting at a table with a knife and fork, and then there's some walls, and from the walls, food kind of floats out. So this is a game that is clearly inspired by the classic children's game of Jax. The idea here is that his nose flies off of his face, and then you move his head around so that you eat all of the food, which is floating about, and then you have to catch the nose at the end. If you don't catch the nose, it can bounce off of his body, which is fine, or it might hit a window, in which case it breaks and you lose a nose. And if you do not eat all of the food, then then you get a pie thrown at you in the face by, according to the flyer, his arch enemy. They do not elaborate on this. His arch enemy is a goblin-like creature in a chef's outfit. It is unclear if that goblin is making the food being eaten or what. But he shows up when you do not eat all the food to throw a pie in your face. And he also shows up carrying peppers, which if you they kind of mix in with the food. And if you eat it, then you apparently do not like peppers and you turn all red. Or maybe you don't turn red, but you have steam come out of your ears and you make a face that makes it look like you don't like it too much. And you have to stop moving for a couple of seconds, which is bad because that reduces the time to catch your nose. There's also some soap that flies out, and that also doesn't taste good, so you don't want to eat it. The single button is a sneeze button. The sneeze button will push away everything, including food, but it will also eliminate the soaps and the peppers. You have another option for defense, which is the chef, or the arch enemy, walks out carrying the pepper. And before he releases the pepper, you can use your head to just push him back into the hole. And so that way you don't have to sneeze, you don't have to deal with the pepper. As you progress through the levels, after every level is a bonus level, and they vary a bit. You might just have to bounce the nose off your face. You have to catch some baseballs, and there's a sort of like baseball catcher's mask that shows up on his face. There's another one where you have to juggle three balls. There's one where you have to eat as many peanuts as possible while bouncing the nose, and that is timed. Those are pretty fun. I like those quite a bit. As the game progresses, you eat through every meal in the day, so a breakfast, lunch, dinner, and a midnight snack. And then at the end of the day, you start over, and things get more difficult. I think on the second six meals?
Six courses for every meal.
Six courses for every meal. At the end of the day, you start a new day and things go faster and you have to eat more food, which ups the difficulty level. And I think it's also, is it on the second day that the cuckoo clock shows up?
Yeah, they start getting things out of the wall or the ceiling that make it difficult to move around.
Yeah. There's also sometimes a hand that comes out and grabs Jackson's nose and takes it into one of the holes in the wall. And then puts it out or another random one. And that's both kind of annoying because you don't know which one it's going to come out of, but it also takes a little while, so it gives you some more time to eat up all of the food. Score is based on eating the food, not eating the soap or peppers, and the bonus levels are a great place to build up points because you can... I don't know if there's an end to them. I don't think we've ever seen if there's a max, but you can build up a lot of points that way. Like every bounce of your nose gives you, I think, 200 points. Yeah, good chance to build up points in between there. Yes, Jordan.
The peanut one is timed at the end because that's just eat everything and bounce. That you could go on without forever.
Right. That the peanut one is the exception. The other ones seem like they don't have a fixed end. They just end up getting so fast that you cannot respond in time and you end up dropping the nose and breaking one of the windows behind Snacks and Jackson. And also, I don't 100% know this, but it seems like the nose can bounce off of the wood slats in between the glass panes, but I wouldn't count on it because it is kind of rough. The nose has a shadow that shows up on the background that shows where it is going to land, and that is essential for being able to catch it on your face or bounce it off of it. I think that is everything. There is honestly not much to the gameplay here. It is a pretty straightforward game once you get the hang of it.
Yeah, this goes with my theme of food games like Burger Time, Food Fight, Snacks and Jackson. Let's live all the food games. I mean, what can I say?
You need to have this game, Brian.
I would love to have this game. It's great. So what do we talk about first? We don't have notes in front of us.
Outside in, so we should talk about the
Art,
the art
cabinet and
the
art.
Well, the cabinet. I mean, you can talk a lot about the Sente cabinet. I mean,
I think you should talk some about the Sente cabinet because you showed me some of the insides of it, and I think it's pretty cool.
All right. Well, so for those who don't know about the Ballet Sente system, it is similar to, I would say, the Atari System 1, where it's a cabinet designed to have multiple games played within it. Obviously, this was appealing to operators, so they didn't have to buy a new, big, huge wooden box every time they wanted a new game. So as the 80s wore on, we should say this game is from 1983.
84, says the flyer.
Okay, I think it's 83 on the screen, but that doesn't mean that it came out then.
Yeah, that's when they wrote the game, not when it got released.
Not when it got released, so... So it's kind of late, and probably why it wasn't terribly popular.
It's just fucking weird.
It is very weird. It could be one of the weirdest arcade games. I mean, we haven't mentioned that yet, but it could definitely be one of the weirdest arcade games there were. It is a very strange concept, and I didn't even get the Jax thing.
Yeah.
I played this game at California Extreme as well, just like Brian, and I did like it. I always just thought it was just rare and weird, and I would never have it. And I ended up getting one. I can go into that, but we're talking about the cabinet. And
there's two cabinets.
There are two cabinets, yes. The first, should we go back to like Ballet Sente is a Nolan Bushnell company.
Right.
With a lot of ex-Atari people were involved in this company as well. And it kind of seemed like, at least at the beginning, when it was just Sente, Bally wasn't even involved. So it started out just Sente, and the first game was Snake Pit. And at that point, there's no Bally. It's Nolan Bushnell's company. He's got all sorts of ex-Atari employees, writing games for him, designing these games, and it really seems like they could just do what they wanted. It seems like the next chapter of Atari after post Warner, post Chuck E. Cheese, and all that stuff. The first cabinet is this weird immersion cabinet that's like it only has a 19-inch monitor, like everything else, but it's steel framed with plastic panels on the outside that are really big, and then the monitor is set down inside of it very low,
almost
flat, like a Pac-Man or Superbug designed so you would stick your head in it basically when you're playing the game, and so you're immersed in an arcade. So you think about an arcade situation where there might be music playing, there could be hundreds of games on around you, all sorts of noise, but how do you like get sucked into the game? So I guess this was their idea, to stick your head in this thing. But the problem is they're too fat. They don't fit through doorways. They're heavy. It's a steel frame cabinet. They're ugly with plastic sides. It's the only real true cabinet for Snake Pit, which was the first Sente game. Sorry, not Bally. But anyhow, on to the next iteration. Bally bought Sente, and so Nolan Bushnell, I'm sure, was rich again. And
we should mention Senti is another move from the game of Go, which Atari is also from. So
there you
got
go.
Some thematic continuity there.
Yes, yes. So yeah.
Also, Chuck E. Cheese is no, it's not.
Pizza Time Theater also.
Was there a pizza eating rat in Go?
No. Oh yeah, definitely.
So the more common cabinet, which I have, is a SAC-1B.
Is it more common or less common?
I think this is more than the immersion cabinet.
It's way more common.
Yeah.
Think so?
I think these are more common than the immersion. I think a lot of the immersion cabinets got gone because people didn't like them.
Well, because they suck.
They don't fit through a doorway. They weigh an extra 100 pounds.
Ugly.
And, they're ugly.
And this cabinet's not really a looker either, to be honest. It's just kind of a generic.
It's fine. So.
It's got generic looks to it, but it has some really good features to it. So the story I heard is once Bally bought the company, they hated that fucking immersion cabinet too. And so the first thing they wanted to do was like, let's make a normal cabinet for these games. So there's a cool thing where all the electronics basically are on wheels. All the boards sit upright on a little trolley with wheels on the bottom. And you can slide everything right out. The transformer, everything. I moved this game down in my basement and I slid out, like I took it apart and Brian helped me.
Yep.
But I took everything out in like 15 minutes and it was like ready to just fall down the stairs basically and put it back together again in like 15 minutes.
It was very light when all that came out, especially the monitor and all the guts.
It's a really cool modular system. So, this SAC-1B cabinet that I have, the whole front, so you think about where the coin door is, imagine that whole panel is a door. So the whole front of the cabinet opens up like a big-ass door, and that's where everything is. Because these games are modular games, they have cartridges that are. It's designed to change the games very easily. So I have like Snake Pit or Chicken Shift, which we've done on this episode before, or on this, not this episode, but this podcast before.
In Maine, because we didn't think we'd have an actual hardware to play it on.
That's right. Now we could actually play it on hardware and see what we think. But anyhow, we got plenty more games to play. They made it very modular to where the control panel doesn't even really need to be changed. It's an insert that the controls are on. So it's like six or seven screws that you pull out, and then two or three Molexes depending on the game, and there's your new controls. You literally open up the front of the game, you pull out this small cartridge. It's basically a small PCB with a bunch of ROMs on it and a couple other chips. They're 6 inches by 5 inches, maybe an inch or two more here or there.
Is this the part where you have to turn the switch off?
Yes, and so that's the cool part, is you actually, there's a power switch that blocks you from like taking the cartridge out. So you can't like just yank the cartridge out with the power on.
Why would you do that?
You don't do it when the power's on.
Yeah.
You don't damage the board.
You're just a dumbass operator. You're like, time to change the game. Why would you turn off your game? You're just one.
It's just a fancier version of the interlock switch on the back of the cabinet.
That's why they went bankrupt, that switch.
The
fucking wheels or whatever on them.
$2 switch and the $4 wheels.
I mean, that, yeah.
You know, it all adds up.
When you were about to change the game out, I purposely went behind and turned the game off because I was like, he's going to need to turn the game off because you were putting all the stuff in. Then you were like, nope. And you turned it back on. You're like, check this out. And you flip that switch. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, the switch physically blocks you from pulling the cartridge out. So you have to flick the switch to off to get the cartridge out. And then you can put the new one in and turn it back on. And there you go.
And then you blow on the cartridge before you put it in.
Except it's the PCB just has the flat part. You'd have to like get down on your hands and knees and blow into the CPU. I've never heard of a Bally Sente repair thread. I don't know if these things ever break.
Better knock on wood on that one.
Yeah, I think
maybe just the games aren't good enough for anyone to care about fixing.
If they break, they just throw them away.
That game broke. Okay, that's a load off my mind.
So yeah, it's a great cabinet design. Just the swappable control panels. the monitor's upright in your face, you know, more modern, not down like a Pac-Man, more up like a Williams cabinet. I don't have anything to complain about with it. It's really easy to access. You pull everything out. It's a cool design. I think it's a logical evolution of a classic arcade game. I think they had a lot of experience making these things, and it shows.
Yeah, it's nice everything comes out the front.
That is really nice.
I mean, it is pretty much exactly like System 1, because System 1 has stuff in the front. Oh, you can't pull it out, but it's the same daughter card situation.
Yeah, but it's a total pain in the ass to change a System 1 game.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm just saying it's the same.
I've always had a Marble Madness down here, and I've never changed it back to another game.
Ever. Well, that's because that's the best one. Why would you change it?
Road Blasters. That's like Road Blasters. Second best. That's like the second best
one. I don't like that game at all.
Yeah.
It sucks.
The cabinet seems like a cross between a Bally Midway cabinet with the coin door and the kick panel and asteroids-ish sized jutted out control panel. And yeah,
it is pretty tall.
It's a big cabinet. Yeah. It's not small. It sticks way out. It's very System 1-y shape, but bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But the monitor sits really low. Like it's, Looking at it against Robotron or something like that, it's like control panel seems like it's set up for kids or something.
The control panel is lower than a lot of classic games. It's way lower. Yeah.
It's right next to Ice Cold Beer. It's like maybe like 3 or 4 inches more than that, but it's a good maybe 5 to 6 shorter than Robotron, and I was really, my wrist was killing me after like one game.
Because of the low control panel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the design's kind of poor, to be honest.
Oh, just because of the height?
Yeah. I mean, it's a modular, technology is good, but I think the cabinet form factors for a playability standpoint is not that great.
I bet you a Donkey Kong is just as low, if not lower.
Probably. That sucks too, though.
So this is a cabinet designed to hold multiple games. So let's talk artwork. What's the art situation like? Like it's got, I mean, you probably swap out the marquee.
Mm-hmm. Marquee
and
control.
Sounds like, you know, like if you're thinking of Neo Geo or something, they just made all the games use the same controls. Even like, you know, you play a driving game with a joystick because you can't put a wheel on there. So what's up with the controls and the arts package?
Well, there's a lot of different control panels for this. There, like for Night Stalker, there's a control panel that has a steering wheel with a gun. So that's
okay.
That's an interesting combination.
Yeah.
There.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I played that before.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You drive and shoot with a handgun, like on a
not the best.
The game is
on a bad. It's like a Duck Hunt. You know, it's on a wire. You know, so
it's
you're
like single person, lucky and wild.
Yeah, you're holding the wheel in one hand and a fucking pistol in your other hand. So there's that game.
As you do.
That's kind of awesome, actually. I want to play this game now.
And there's another driving game. There is
Stalker.
Just regular Stalker, where you then have a gear shift. So instead of having a gun in your hand,
Why not both?
You can keep your hand.
Because you have to shift.
You can keep your hand busy with a high and low. So
you can shift holding a gun.
So never any foot pedals, though, on these games. Unless you want to talk about stomping, which is a whole other thing, which is the kind of the primitive DDR, which probably this was probably worth every penny they gave to Nolan Bushnell, because now Bally has been able to sue Konami for DDR for the last fucking 50 years or whatever, because they came up with the stompy panel first.
But now they're defunct, so.
Okay, and then you've got games that have like two joysticks, like Hat Trick, which is the great one-on-one hockey game, which is very fun to play. And then you've got some games with... there's Snake Pit, which is the original game, which is a sweet game, which is a joystick and a trackball. You've also got Chicken Shift, where it's just two buttons. You've got Fucking goalie ghost, where it's two track balls and maybe a button to jump.
So do you swap out the whole control panel?
No, it's an insert. It's just like fucking like four or five screws, five or six screws. Yep. And then three Molexes. So you don't even do the whole control panel.
Nice.
There's three of them up there.
That's really sweet.
Yeah. It's cool. It's much easier than the system one. I would say this is system three.
Yeah. So you get a generic bezel and marquee and only control panel for artwork. So it's a little lacking.
Only control panel and then the marquee.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get a new marquee for every game and they're trans lights. They aren't, that's all. That's what they were doing by then.
Yeah.
It's just the generic side art. I think it just says Bally Senti on it. Mm-hmm. But again, kind of System 1-y.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it has a similar sort of theme as the System 1.
It is like blocks of color, basically. Yeah.
And classic 80s.
It looks 80s for sure. We had fun. They tend to fade in the light. So sometimes they look two-tone, and we had fun like arguing if they are two-tone or are they green, are they blue. And it seems like they just kind of do different things from faded, and there were a couple variations, but they're basically very blocky, very plain side art. But it is full side art. It isn't like a black painted cabinet that your operator made you in the 90s.
Yeah, it's like the color changing T-shirts.
Hypercolor.
Hypercolor side art. So if your game's hot, it lets you know and turns.
I had one of those where a fucking like. There was a guy on a motorcycle with a leather jacket, and then when it got hot, he was like a guy on a bike without a jacket.
No way.
Wow. I had one. It was fucking terrific.
So I would say this particular game, I think the control panel art is nice. It's a checkerboard. It matches the theme. It matches
I'll
the
give
game.
You
it's a
that.
Fucking tablecloth. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Exactly. Tablecloth.
Well, so
sucks though.
Jack's in the box. He sits at a table. He's in a very bad situation. He's trapped in a room with windows behind him and this table in front of him and nowhere to go.
Well, I should have mentioned this before, but Jack's in the box is another the display is a diorama. Right, and so he is in a box. Jack's in the box.
He is in a box. Yeah, he's stuck in the box. It's not a good situation. I don't know how he's going to get out of there.
Yeah, so much food, no toilet.
Yeah, he should probably break those windows and go take a dump out in the field.
Yeah.
But
the bed in there for him, too.
A couple of more of those Hostess cupcakes, and I'll break that window.
Yes. Yeah, he does sleep back there, too.
Yeah,
right? It's his whole life.
It's a studio apartment.
I think
that's where rich people live for you Zoomers out there.
These are like rich people who don't live in their car.
Yeah.
Seems like the marquee's... I like the marquee. It does describe a lot of the game, kind of like Zookeeper or a lot of the other ones that we've played recently. The control panel art kind of sucks.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out the little green guy, and we referred to the marquee.
Yep. Like, yeah, he's right there.
I have to say, I think the marquee is pretty great, and I appreciate the thematic continuity of the logo for the game being the same on the marquee and in the game and on the flyer. And I have to say, I think the logo is a really good logo design. It's an old west kind of theme
parlor.
Yeah, it looks
carny type of thing because he's a clown.
Looks like it could be over the entrance to a saloon a little bit, maybe.
Oh, yeah, totally. When I open my saloon, it'll be Snacks and Jackson's. Snacks and Jordan's.
And also, it has, I think, maybe a little bit of a 70s vibe with the big cartoony S and J in Snacks and Jackson. It makes me think of that keep on trucking kind of vibe.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I see that. Yep.
Yeah, I like the... Overall, I definitely like the marquee. I think the control panel is fine. I like the tablecloth motif going on there. I think the one thing that probably these games could benefit from, which would be probably difficult, is to each have their own bezel, because just having this Bally green Bally Senti bezel just really breaks up the whole art package, because that's going to be the same on every game, and I don't think any Senti game has a bezel, right?
Did you see there's two bezels. There's that one that I have, and then there's like a
I'm looking at this one, the green one.
Yep, that's the one I have. But then there's kind of one that's more like pinstripey looking.
Mm-hmm.
It's no better, and it clashes with more games. It's like fancy. It almost reminds me like it should be on Tapper, maybe.
Hmm.
It's kind of loopy, floofy. But again, relatively plain. Instead of straight lines, it's curly lines, basically.
I'm sure they didn't want to ship out a big piece of glass to
It's a pain in the ass. We know when we try to buy a bezel, it sucks.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's the one knock against like Sente games is, as far as the arc goes, is that it would be cool if they had custom bezels.
Very plain. Yeah.
Yeah. The marquee might, in fact, be the best Sente marquee because usually the control panels, like right above, you have Chicken Shift and Snake Pit is okay. But most of it's very bland and generic. And so I think they did a really good job on the marquee. But overall, it's pretty weak in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 84, that, you know, the market was still pretty dead. So, you know, that's one of those corners they had to cut, you know, make a cabinet that can take a couple of different games and sell them more cheaply than buying a full dedicated game and use the translights. And, yeah, I think that's just where the market was at.
Yep.
Yeah, I think they did. I think they did a good job though, working with the market. Everything's not rosy in fucking Bally Sente world. Let me just tell you, they put out like 30 fucking games, and you know 30 minus five of them suck. So yeah,
30 minus five. I was looking though, 84. Atari at this point. Oh, this is bullshit.
Sure. I mean, they came out with...
That's Gauntlet, Rampart, that kind of era there. Yeah.
Yeah, the...
I mean, it's kind of past the classic era for Atari, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At that point, I think, you know, Midway were probably kings of the arcade because, you know, they were... They had games that were maybe, well, you know.
Games, period.
Well, like half of these Senti games are Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah. No, there's some real dogs. That's for sure.
Wow.
I remember in the arcade. So what Senti games do I remember in the arcade? I remember Give Me a Break was everywhere. Mini Golf was everywhere. And I never saw Snacks and Jackson. I might have seen Chicken Shift. I never saw Snake Pit. It was mostly Give Me a Break and Stalker. I saw Stalker.
I remember playing Stalker in like the immersion cabinet. And that one, I specifically remember it, and it's just a super fun game to play because you could like spin the steering wheel to kind of go around corners and stuff like that. It was when I played Dan's Stalker, I was like, oh yeah, this game. I totally remember
it's
this.
It's very much Sprint 2 type of control. Yeah. Spin the control
and run away from the cops and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's a good game. It's good, yeah.
And then you see Matt Hall play it, and it's like there's like three shortcuts, and then you're done.
Yeah, he does the same thing over and over and over again and gets the highest score in the world or whatever. Yeah, he
boring.
Basically, yeah, there's a hack, and it's ruined at that point. Because then you're like, oh, I want
to
do that.
It's funner to play the regular way.
Definitely. I think Bill has a Night Stalker. We'll have to.
No, yeah.
We'll have to play that.
Pretty
sometime.
Sure I played that in the arcade as well.
Yeah, I played it at his house once, and it was interesting.
I think Mini Golf and Stalker are the only Senti. Well, and Snacks. Well, Chicken Shift if you count Mame, and Snacks and Jackson are the only ones I've played. And I don't remember seeing any of these back in the arcade, but I did not spend as much time there. I did play the MS-DOS port of Hat Trick. I thought that was pretty dope on my computer in the 80s.
Nice. Hat Trick is one that I like to play on a MAME cabinet if I can get somebody to play me because it's fun one-on-one simultaneous game. It's fun. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't like playing it by myself, but if I can get somebody, you know, roped in. Oh, you like hockey?
Is it just air hockey? Because you're...
No,
aren't you stuck
ice hockey.
Ice hockey.
Yeah.
No, man. Aren't you stuck? What's the game where you're stuck at the goal?
Oh, that's fucking Goalie Ghost. No,
okay, that's the one I was thinking of. Yeah. So that's basically like air hockey.
That's terrible. Yeah, that's a 3D Pong. I have that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Because they basically made a bunch of games. Oh, I'll save it. Never mind.
No, right. No, talk about it.
Oh, I was just going to say, it seems like most of the games they made are simple games, right? Like air hockey, mini golf,
Trivial Pursuit,
Jacks, Trivial Pursuit, all primitive kids games or something.
Hey, don't forget. What about Name That Tune?
Name That Tune.
Yeah, everyone is like, dun, 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 dun,
Speak.
Damn, I know that one.
We'll get to that. So. Yeah.
There's this Easter egg in Name That Tune. It's like track five. Dun, 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 yeah. dun. You get to pick which game is that. All right. Usually we talk about graphics and sound.
Let's talk about the sound, Brandon. What do you think about the sound on this game?
Dun, 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 dun.
That's music, goddammit.
Those aren't sounds.
That's different.
Achoo. Achoo.
Yeah, I think overall I like the sounds on this game. I mean, even the theme can be kind of repetitive, but there is, you know, some more to it than just the notes you just graced us with. But I think overall the sound on this game is good, and I guess it's you and the little pin you're wearing are laughing at the end of the stage, and that's pretty fun. And just, yeah, the sneezing, and I don't know, I'm down with the sound on this game. It sounds pretty good.
I agree. This is the, I'm looking at the MAME source right now.
Oh, here it goes.
Looks like we've got an MM5837 sound synth chip in this. I am not super familiar with that one, but I think it sounds pretty dang good. I like the music on this game. I like the way it sounds. It's got that kind of like early 80s synth grit to it. It sounds really good. I dig it. The sound effect, like, I think the music is really good, really shows off what the system can do. The sound effects are a little hit and miss for me. But overall, I'm a fan.
Yeah. Sente games in general, I think, have really, really strong music packages. Like, Stalker. Stalker is fucking amazing. Like, that soundtrack's awesome. You sit and listen to that. This game's really cool. It's relaxing. You just kind of get into the groove when you're playing. And it seems to work. Yeah, sound effects, you don't really notice them at all. Like, they almost don't exist in this game. Like, the bonus round where you're collecting, like, the peanuts and the sound ramps up, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool. Like, there's some effects that are redeeming, but usually it's pretty dismal.
The baseball is probably my favorite. Yeah. With it creates that tension, yeah, like a good game should. Like with the sound, like an Asteroids or a Omega Race or whatever, something that ramps up. I think the baseball one is really good at that because it gets faster and faster and faster.
Or the juggling.
Or the juggling.
The
one.
Juggling, yeah. Dude.
Fucking the juggling one is so hard, though. It's got like those three notes. Ah, yeah, so good. I will mention something about hardware is it's the same sound ROMs for every fucking game. So however they make that work.
So it's just an arrangement.
Well, they've got a Z80 on that soundboard. So they were that was a really common configuration in the late 80s and 90s. Like the Neo Geo MVS had a Z80 just for the sound processor. So like once they moved off using the Z80 as the main CPU to run the game, it became very, very common to throw a Z80 on there just to run the sound. Just have a dedicated sound processor for it. So,
but the same sound ROMs, though, is the difference.
I don't know what ROMs they would have, but you know, if you have that kind of setup, you generally would you'd have some shared RAM with the main game, and then you would just write a sound routine that runs on the Z80. So you're just going to be controlling the synth however you want to do game to game because it's in shared RAM. I don't know what the what's
kind of like the Williams stuff too, right? A lot of the Williams games kind of share the same sounds,
but you can tell,
yeah,
and because they literally share the same sound.
Yeah, it's like it's like an arrangement. It's like here's the music library loaded in, and then we'll write code to do whatever arrangement. And it seems like they may have also streamlined not only the cabinet being modular, but maybe the sound library package or whatever.
It could be like the same thing. There's just more sounds.
Sound Blaster 16.
Just because it's later. Yeah. But the ROMs on the soundboard, they just stay there. The cartridges have graphical EEPROMs and game code EEPROMs.
Yeah. I really like the music. It's a strong point. If you're going to have music, it better be good. Because they could ruin a whole game.
Or at least catchy, you know?
Yeah. Catchy, but not... I enjoy repetitiveness if it's like mellow, you know.
So
like
is this better or worse than the Blueprint song?
That's up for debate. You know what? Maybe we should do a dial-in poll for that because I like them both. They both capture the same harmony, like they're very relaxing. I don't know. This could overtake it, maybe.
If the listeners want to weigh in on this, I will put in right here the Blueprint song and a little snippet of the Snacks and Jackson song, and you can tell us which one you prefer. Right now.
Now.
Go.
Blueprint's music. Snacks on Jackson's music.
Nice. Okay, I'm walking this back. I'm looking more at the main source, and this actually has two AY8910s on it, and that is one of my very favorite 80s sound synth chips.
The Yamaha?
Yeah. AY is a Yamaha designation, and I think they just make some really damn fine sound. After you get beyond that era, you get into the like OPL FM synth chips, and I think those suck ass.
Very classic 80s, early 80s MIDI sound, I think. It's not MIDI, sorry. But
it's once you get into the OPL, it's more MIDI-ish.
Now, along with the sound between Blueprint and Snacks and Jackson, what about the game Snacks and Jackson versus Blueprint?
That's no contest. This is a much better game than Blueprint. Yeah. I mean, I love Blueprint, but it is firmly in rare because it sucks. This is also rare because it sucks, but it sucks better.
Yes, sucks better. And the bad is good.
Yeah.
I would almost say rare because
it's weird.
It's very weird. It's misunderstood.
I don't think many people have experienced it.
That's true. I never saw it in the arcade.
It's like it just took me one time playing it. I was like, whoa, this game is crazy, and I like it.
It's nice because a lot of these games, I've spent some time digging through weird MAME shit. And this is a game, like, there's plenty of games out there where you're like, what the fuck were they thinking? That's weird as shit. But this is a game that's weird as shit, but also pretty fun to play. And that's a hard thing to do. It's much harder than just making a weird game. Anyone can make a weird game, but making one that's both weird and fun, that's something else entirely.
It's kind of weird on the surface, but then it does make some sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, kind a clown sneezing of? His nose off.
Does and it, yeah.
a rubber clown nose that breaks windows and a fucking goblin coming out of holes in the wall and, you know, food floating around the room. I mean, who among us has not had that experience of a day?
But it's also floating the nose in front of him like gravity is...
It's like sideways.
It's opposite day.
It's sideways gravity. Yeah,
it's what sideways is that all day. About?
That's
maybe you're laying down. Maybe it's looking down on you, and you're up in space.
Yeah, maybe he's laying
in space. I mean, maybe, but you're like sitting up at a table,
right? So. Or you're laying in bed. Yeah,
so you're
it's
laying back
space house, man. That's a space house
with your feet
it's
in the
clearly
air.
On a rubber band. Nose on a rubber band, it's like one of those paddle balls.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about graphics then.
Let's do.
The graphics remind me a lot of like a Sega Genesis game. I don't know why, but they're pretty good. You know, games like Chicken Shift and Snake Pit and I don't know. Actually, all the Sentai games, their graphics kind of suck. It was to the era where, it's past System 1 time period. It's the graphics are detailed, but they're not... You know, it kind of has an MCR vibe, but more realistic. I guess. I don't know. You know, MCR kind of had that cartoony art design.
Yeah, yeah. I could see like kind of an evolution from Timber Tapper.
Yeah.
Like later MCRs where things were starting to get more detailed, I think. There's detail in the sprites.
Yeah, it's a transition from, you don't think of it as like just pixel art. You think of it as kind of like that in-between 16-bit-ish kind of era where it's, like, oh shit, we're almost about to go to digitized graphics. And so let's try to make it, they didn't get that real, but, like mini golf, they try to make it super realistic looking and all that. And the palettes are kind of muddy and
not very vibrant.
Chicken Shift is like horrible looking.
Chicken Shift looks much older than it is.
Yeah,
I would say.
And none of the games are really like standout games, to be honest. This actually might be the best graphics on the platform, I think. Because pretty much every game, it's a static play field, right? Like Snake Pit, you go into a pit and you stay there. Like the hockey game, you're stuck there. Mini golf, you're staring at one green. Chicken Shift, you're staring at a fucking barn. Yep. And nothing's really amazing. Nothing's barely moving. And so they didn't really have much to work with.
Now, Stalker, I started dissing on Chicken Shift, but think about the levels where the eggs have to go out the window. That's a little bit more on par.
Yeah, because there are a lot bigger graphics on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Bigger characters.
Yeah, but that, they should have done that the whole game. I forgot about that. Stalker, a little bit more colorful and vibrant, and Night Stalker's just kind of weird. Trivial Pursuit, man, the graphics, fucking insane.
Name that tune. Have you seen the fucking sprites?
It's like when you walk up to an ATM machine and the ATM looks better.
I agree with you on the kind of like the muddy colors. It's like there's so many colors going on, and some of them not really clash. But I mean, things can get kind of lost in the colors, and maybe that's by design, possibly. But some of the levels just look, like a little too kind of washed out colors and
too weird, too lavender, too purple,
kind of similar, like samey colors. And but some of them,
I think they're doing that on purpose.
I think
they're trying to fuck with you, to make the food blend into the backwards or to the background. And then also, as the courses go, it's breakfast, lunch, dinner. So things have to get darker.
Right.
Yeah. Because you've got that, the light coming in through the window.
Yep.
And it's getting darker.
The golden hour.
But I also think your monitor's off.
Well, that's just your opinion.
No, I'm looking at screenshots and they're not as muted. I'm not trying to diss your monitor. I'm just saying, I think the palettes could be a little bit better than you think they are.
I know you're a monitor expert, Brandon. What monitor do you think is in there?
Just based on that comment, probably a G07.
Oh, you got it right.
Damn it. Suck it up.
Nice job.
Lick it.
I accidentally spilled that.
Oh, you spilled my whiskey.
Sorry.
You get it right, you spill the whiskey. It's okay.
The palette is kind of muddy, but I don't know. The screenshots, your game doesn't look like that. This looks a little bit more vibrant. It
looks like some MAME to me.
A little bit. I think your monitor's a little bright, and so that's maybe what the problem was. But
mold, man. I like them bright.
I think it's mostly on the later times of the day, like dinner and lunch and dinner probably are the ones. I like the midnight snack level. That's kind of like completely different from all the other levels because it's got the blue and the really dark tones.
Well, he's also laying in bed instead of sitting at a table, and I was noticing how nice the graphics were of his legs under the blanket. I thought that
really
those were drawn.
Jesus.
Hell yeah! Oh my god!
Them legs, Jackson.
They were drawn real well.
Oh god!
I'll say overall, I think the graphics on this game are pretty good, especially for 84. But there's a weird thing, and I understand exactly why it happens. There's a graphical thing in this game that's kind of jank that I think I would be remiss if I did not mention. When you change from one level to another, and people have thrown the word palette around, what is happening is the You know, it's doing a palette swap in between levels in order to change the colors for the different times of day. And that is all well and good. They have also added some transition animations, which is also well and good. But the animations mean that there is always some graphic on screen. And so you see, like, the palette completely changes and the graphics look weird and wrong moving from level to level because they don't go to a black screen or fade out before they change the palette. They keep the graphics up. So you have the graphics you were looking at with the old palette, and then they change it, and then the new stuff looks good, but the old stuff looks fucking horrible because it's wrong. So every time you swap levels, it has that little bit of jank that I feel like they could have put a little more polish on the game if it did not look broken like, in between every level.
Like a little fade to black would have.
Exactly.
I mean, they probably were pushing stuff to the limits at this point. But
definitely.
I feel like the... I noticed that too. It's like it's almost like the video seems like it collapses for a second and it flickers. I was like, oh, cool.
So like when you play Miss Pac-Man on a Pac-Man, but you didn't swap that one chip. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But they have... you know, there's RAM that holds the palette, right? So every pixel that goes into video RAM is like, I don't know, 2 bits or 3 bits. I don't know how many colors are in there, but some number of bits go into RAM and that says, okay, this is the color for that. But the color isn't just like a fixed thing, right? It's not like RGB like we work with nowadays. It's an index into RAM that stores the actual color value. So then when you can... It's nice because you can display, you know, if you think about games like the Genesis can display like 512 colors out of a palette of 65,556, right? And that's how it works is the hardware can display that many total, but you have to pick which 512 are represented by any particular bit pattern. And this has a similar sort of thing going on. And that's all well and good. I just wish that they had made the transitions a little less jarring. In some cases, like... when you're finishing up the level and it like shows the snacks and Jackson, like the full on screen with kind of a gradient and the logo in the center, I think that looks pretty okay. But in between different times of day, in between meals, I think it looks jank.
Yeah. It reminds me of, what is it? Is that CGA games or whatever, where they had like they only had so many colors and they had to like be really interesting with, or creative with, you know, that same color touching other objects. And so, when they swap the levels, it seems kind of fun how they do that. But,
like I said, overall, I think the graphics are good. And, you know, touches like the neck stretching from the body to the head, no matter where you move it in the level, I think that's pretty good. Like,
they kept the
hard
neck. Yeah, they kept drawing it. And the shadow. I mean,
neck.
You rely on the damn shadow of your nose. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And it's they do a fucking good job. I mean, it's sometimes it's a little tough, like when... Okay, did it hit me or not?
Yeah,
and because I want to move on. If this has hit me, I want to go to get some more food. And sometimes I get that wrong, where I think it's been on my face, but it hasn't quite got there yet. And I move out of the way and breaks the glass.
Yeah.
That goes back to the... this is drifting. That goes back to the sound package. I think they could have made that more apparent with some of the sounds there.
Yeah, a little louder sound of when it bounces. I agree.
But yeah, it's if you look at the screenshot and you had no context, you're like, oh, what Genesis game is that? That's kind of reminds me of, I don't know why.
It's pretty good graphics.
Yeah.
For, I mean, if you compare this to, say, like a medium res game,
yeah,
I think it's right there. I mean, I don't see where like a Paperboy or a Championship Sprint is looking that much better, or APB or whatever. I think
they have less to care about though, because it's a fixed, it's a fixed level too. There's not actually
they're
much,
not scrolling.
There's not much moving. Like all the backgrounds are the same.
I see.
So
Well, there's a shit ton of sprites. I mean, there's a lot of things moving about.
That's
that screen.
True.
Him zooming in and out, is probably pretty taxing.
There's a lot of sprites, but there isn't scrolling, so I guess that would be the thing.
They should have done a level transition like Tempest. Like you zoom through the windows and then there's another room behind it.
You zoom past his head and his head's like...
And there are some levels that have like tons of sprites on them, like the peanut level where you get like all you can eat and there's just like, you know,
hundreds of them
on there on the screen at a time.
There's a lot.
Yeah. Oh, you know, they could have made it so that when you transition levels, his nose goes out to the screen and then you go in and you follow with the nose and it's like...
That'd be cool.
It makes a Tempest sound.
Smash that, through that sounds, the glass.
That reminds me of like a Neo Geo game attract screen. All those had like huge animations through those.
And then it breaks through the window and then like the whole play field turns like this. Like you're in a cube. And
then it turns into like QB3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's Cube 3.
Cube 3, not QB3. Okay. Cube
3. No quarterbacks here.
Cube 3.
So what do we got next? Or are we done with graphics and sound?
We got
graphics, sound, gameplay.
Gameplay.
Sound.
Strategy.
Strategy.
What was your strategy?
I won. So a couple things you have to do. The peppers and the soap are your worst enemy. So sneeze early. So your sneeze is basically your only offense. This is basically a defensive game. You are just avoiding the... you're just kind of moving around really fast. What kind of game is this? You're just moving around. Is it a maze? What, it's kind of a maze.
It's kind of its own sort of thing.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I like it because it's a trackball game. For some reason, I like trackball games. Quantum Reactor. These are some of my favorite games. It's like moving. You flail all around the screen, eating all the fucking fruit. And then you have to like slow it down and get real precise at the end. Yeah, so it's like a big flail covering all the screen and then super precise, you know, at the very last half a second to get that ball. So your sneeze is really your only offense, and that you use to get rid of the pepper and the soap because those will really fuck you up. Sometimes you time it just right. It's nice to sneeze at the beginning of the level because imagine your sneeze as being a cone emitting from your face, which a sneeze is, right? You know, you've seen those slow motion videos, all that nasty shit coming out your mouth, you know? And so if you're on one side of the screen or way up, like far forward and you sneeze, it's not going to do much. It's just going to be that little quadrant of the screen. If you sneeze at the beginning where your head is next to your body, you're basically like sneezing out at the whole screen. And so if you have just cleared a course and there's already peppers and soap out there, as soon as you can start the next course, sneeze and get rid of those and then go do your thing. And hopefully you can get back to get your nose on your face in time. I mean, that's really what you're trying to do. In later levels where it gets super hard, if there's already peppers and soaps out there, you're probably just not going to be able to do it. And hopefully you have a lot, and you can't sneeze them away right at the beginning, and you have all these obstacles to avoid. It could be that you're just going to lose a nose every couple levels. This game gives you extra men.
Every 20,000 points.
Every 20,000
extra points, noses.
Extra nose, yeah. So hopefully you can, as the levels go on, you get more points for every food that you eat, and you also get more food. It's like in the first level, there's no food, you know, or the first course of the first meal, I should say. So there's courses, there's meals, and there's days. And I think this game might only go to 5 days. I've been to the fourth day. I don't know if there's an ending or what happens after that. I've never looked at a meme and cycled through there. But strategy is to, you know, eat all the food and get your nose back. And you cannot leave any food away. Did we mention that?
We did.
Okay.
Yeah. I did.
Yeah, you just have to move your fucking nose around fast. Or move your head around fast with the trackball.
So I noticed that you were using the sneeze button a lot more than anyone else. That seems like that's actually pretty key. I was really hesitant to use it because it makes you pause for a moment when you're doing that. But it seems like I should get over it. The other thing I think I did not mention this is when your arch enemy comes out with a pepper or whatever, you can use your head to just kind of shove him back in the hole or move him around the level.
Yeah.
And I noticed a couple times I was just kind of by the hole he was coming out and just shoved him straight back in there without even really trying. That was pretty great. But yeah, what do you think about doing that generally? Is that a good strategy or shitty strategy?
I think if you end up there, you're there already. Yeah, go ahead and do it. Don't move across the screen to do it. You'll take too much time. And if he's too far out, if he's already taken a few steps out into the screen, and especially if his pepper is facing you, it'll still burn you. So it's too risky to do that. But if he's right there and he's only taken a few steps, I think, yeah, and you're there, go ahead and shove him back in. But I like putting my head back towards the middle of the screen and sneezing to get rid of stuff. You can hear how wacky this game is, right?
I like sneezing.
Well, you're also talking about how you can kind of juggle the ball on your face when it's coming down and you put your face further out and you can kind of like...
In the early levels, yeah, you have all this time where, and I don't know what the deal is with that dynamic.
Probably just an intro to the mechanic, I think, is what it is.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't know.
You can do this weird thing where it's like, okay, I've already got the food and I have all this time. I'm waiting for the ball to come back. And you just stick your face on it and it makes this noise and it starts racking up points. Okay, that one. Okay. So, yeah, it's very much like the macho points on Krull where it's not... explicitly like, you know, a part of the game, but it is a part of the game.
Except you're not really in danger on this one.
Yeah, that's probably because
further away.
It's the only time that you're on the edge of the screen or the closest, and you can't really do anything. The ball can't do anything, so it's just kind of a wash, and you get 25 points. But then you can't do it forever because it starts to beat you back, and so it's a mini point press, I guess.
Yeah, it's very strange. I don't know why it's in the game, honestly, but it is there.
Yeah.
Just adds a little extra depth. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the later levels, you can't do it. It's only in the first levels where you have time to waste.
I can do it. I think, I don't know, my strategy was, first I had to understand what was going on. And then it seemed like you could get a really good momentum. Like when each level starts, you know, how you kind of slowly go out and then the nose releases and it's like you want to just whip the trackball around right away and you can't, and then but since the fruit or food or whatever it is all comes out around the perimeter, I always like to just kind of whip it around like a clock, you know, around the outside, and then it seemed to work almost every time. And then, like, you know, occasionally the pepper will come out and you'll hit it, but then you could sneeze, but then if that's the wrong way, then you can kind of walk yourself back. But it seems like you gain momentum and you can go really quick if you kind of stay along the outside versus kind of just staying in the closer to your body.
Yeah, you got to go around the outside and get all that food. And that's why the later levels, they put obstacles in your way.
Yeah.
And now you can't do that.
Yeah. And I think the hitting, yeah, like you were saying, if you can hit the pepper dude when he comes out, but only if you're close because the ball, as the levels progress, it's like you don't have time. So, but if you do sneeze, then you should probably do it close to where the ball is because it's going to be coming down quick. And it's kind of a frustrating part of it.
So what are all the obstacles that show up? We got the cuckoo clock on the second day.
So there's a cuckoo clock. And the next day you get a light bulb on the top of the screen. And then on the third day, or I guess it would be the fourth day, yeah, because there's nothing on the first day, cuckoo clock on the second day, light bulb third day, and on the fourth day, the light bulb turns into a chandelier, which is like way bigger. It's like takes up like half the fucking ceiling, and you still have the cuckoo clock, and then something else comes out now, the the left side of the screen, which I forget what it is. I only just got there like last night, so I hadn't seen it before. And so, yeah, I don't know what happens on Friday. You know, it goes Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And it kind of looks, as far as how big those sprites are on the screen that tell you where you've been, it kind of looks like that's it, like five.
He's going to take the weekend off? What's going on?
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe there's another level, you know, maybe there's another row below.
Everybody's working for the weekend.
Yeah. And I guess I should we mention the skill step? I mean, this is this is a super cool part of Balicente Games. Chicken Shift doesn't have it, but Snake Pit and this game, Snacks and Jackson, that we're talking about, let's stick with Snacks and Jackson, it has an excellent skill step, which I think is another logical extension from Atari. You know, they came up with this for Tempest in 1980, and if you do well in a game, then you don't have to start at level one again. And it's the same thing with this. If you make it all the way through a whole day, not a meal, but all the meals in a day, then you can now start your next game in the next day. And you just have to make it through one meal, and then you'll get a big bonus. So I think if you start on day two, you'll get like a 50,000-point bonus if you can finish one day. So that's substantial. All my big scores have been doing it that way, not starting from the first day.
Okay.
Yep.
Bullshit.
I was noticing your scores were pretty fucking high compared to any we put up, and that explains a lot. Yep.
Yeah. You do it that way. And the nice thing is, so Tempest, you have to like kind of back it up, you know, like if you don't have a decent game, like if you don't get past a level, then it goes backwards.
That's not how it works.
Isn't it?
No.
Isn't it?
There's a dip. Well, there's two behaviors, and there's a dip that controls them.
Oh, mine isn't that way. I have to, like, if I don't make it past a level after I've stepped up, it puts me back, and I have to, like, work my way up again.
It depends on the dip.
Oh, well, I want to put the dip the other way. I want the easy shit. God damn it. Yeah, this one will stick there. So, like, if a real kick-ass guy plays before you did, and then all of a sudden now I can start on Friday, and all I have to do is make it through, you know, all the courses of one meal on Friday, which might not be that easy, and then I get a 200,000-point bonus, which is, I'm guessing, what it would be. I've never been to Friday. There you go. There's your score. But
yeah, it's kind of like Havoc, too. You do that?
Yeah, Havoc's the same way. Yeah. But doesn't it go back if you don't, like, back it up?
No.
It'll stay there. So if just some kick-ass guy...
Like until you turn the game off?
Until you turn the game off?
Yeah.
Okay, because that's the way Snacks and Jackson is right now. Until you turn it off, it'll be there. It'll have all the days for anybody to play.
Yeah, Tempest's dip in one... Well, okay, never mind. We're not talking about Tempest.
Yes. Okay, so it's a dip switch. All right. So it's the same type of thing. But yeah. I love the skill step, because when you get good at a game, you don't want to play the fucking... The early levels over and over again.
It's annoying.
All right. Let's transition into scores.
All right. So we have scores, which delightfully are in the exact order that we played.
Very appetizing.
Same order that I get to read them off. So Brian with 25,080 points in the last position. I am in number three with 43,865. Brandon in the number two spot with 51,910. And Jordan bringing it home with 76,575.
Big surprise.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Unsurprising, since it is Jordan's game.
And it's a weird trackball game, and that's about the only things I'm good at. So.
Yeah. I have played this game before, but... I feel like I put up a pretty okay score. I had like 55,000 on my first game, but I did not do the cold start challenge, and I should have, because I would have done a lot better.
Yeah, I've never played it, so it's like the third. I think my real game was the third time I've ever played it.
Yeah, I think Jordan had mentioned it before, and I was like, oh, that's a game I've never played before, and I loaded it up in MAME and was like, that's weird, all right.
Did you use the trackball?
He used a mouse. I have a trackball now. And it's like a finger trackball. I guess that's all right. I can do that.
That could be good. I remember playing Quantum in MAME with a mouse. That was pretty nice.
Okay. I'd probably be decent at that game then. Could draw an amazing dick too.
Yeah, I mean that's one thing that they should have taken from, you know, Atari Point.
Yeah.
Atari Point 2.0.
Well,
whatever.
When did Quantum come out? That, it must, like, they were probably in development around the same time, right?
Yeah, because it's 83.
83, so yeah.
It's the last Vector.
No, it's not.
It's not the last Vector.
Last Vector is Empire Strikes Back / Havoc, which was 83.
Right, Empire Strikes Back doesn't count.
I know, that's why I said slash.
You just should have not said it at all.
Yeah.
Havoc was after Quantum?
Oh, yeah. Havoc was the last one. Last production one, I guess. Right. Full main production game.
Quantum has solid balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Solid balls and a dick to show for.
So, yeah, they should have just carried that on to where you could draw a dick at the end.
Absolutely. I mean, every game, really.
Every game, and then they would have.
Every trackball game.
You drag your nose across the window, and it's like smears. And it makes a little, like, wiping window.
You sneeze on the window, and then rub the nose around it.
Yeah. Make a foggy
fucking
window.
Oh, grab a fucking one of the hot dogs. Or
hire me.
Fudgesicles and just.
Did you see this thing up on the screen where somebody looked in the code and they thought they were supposed to be like messages in this game that we never saw?
Yeah, this is there's a Unix utility called the strings that you can throw any file at, and it'll send it'll just dump out whatever printable things are in it. So
like the code that's in the ROMs.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the ASCII or whatever. Yeah,
it has some unused text. I'll stick out my neck for you if you'll stick in a coin for me. That's,
Jesus.
I can see why they didn't leave that one in. Jesus Christ.
That was Nolan's proposed attract mode, probably. And then it shows D-Box in a fucking hot tub or something.
I think,
I know that. Yeah, that's something you can imagine Nolan saying in his hot tub, right?
Yeah, that's his hot tub. It'd be a roll of coins.
And then for breakfast, good morning, time for your... And then, it's just cut off. All these are weirdly cut off. No leaving the table until you finish. Presumably, it would be like the food at the end of that.
Yeah, like you can leave the table. You can't.
And then for lunch, it's already time for, and no baseball until you finish.
Oh, because the bonus at the end of lunch is the baseball catcher's thing. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, that's fucked up. No baseball until you finish. And then they just like... pelt your face with them.
Here's your catcher mask, bitch.
Here's your fucking baseball.
You wanted to play baseball.
Dinner says, now for a nice quiet and no juggling until you finish. And then midnight snack, how about and you'll never rest until you finish your... Is there anything more? Scroll down.
Never know.
Yeah, so the parts that are left out is good morning, time for your breakfast. It's already time for lunch. Now
okay.
It's now for a nice quiet dinner. How about a midnight snack?
I see.
Oh, you see something that I don't see.
No baseball until you finish lunch.
Oh.
Okay. No juggling until you finish dinner. There you go.
And then apparently there's a selected difficulty text.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's your mommy talking to you.
That's right. Yeah, it's always nice to rummage around some old game ROMs. You never know what you'll find in there.
All right, so what's your rating? No baseball until your rating.
Well, I can go first since I picked it. And yeah, this is a super weird game, but I think it's really fun and creative. And it's one of those old school arcade games that the theme just seems crazy to be a game. Like a lot of the ones that we play where you're either throwing food at people or walking over hamburgers or bouncing your nose off your face and picking up food. So it's just kind of a bonkers theme, but it's really fun. Like it's a easy to learn, fun to hard to master game. So I think you can just keep coming back to it and getting better and better and hopefully going through more and more of the weeks or of the days. But yeah, I gave it a coins up because I've always liked this game, so no surprise there. Jordan.
Well, coins up for me. I've always liked it. You know, I only played a little bit at California Extreme. I was, I just kind of wrote it off like, oh, no, I'm never going to be able to play that game. Like, nobody has that. I saw it at the show, and that's it. But then, like Brian said, a guy sold one, and then I decided to, like, go on BAPS, and I saw that Club Member 19 had one listed. Yeah, and he's in Baltimore, and I reached out to him like, hey, see, I was Snacks and Jackson, and we were talking about, you know, I was going to like ship the whole thing, but he also had a chicken shift kit, and so he's like, well, you know, I'm like, he said, well, do you want to just buy the kit? And I'm like, oh, well, hell yeah, because then I don't have to like ship a Sente cabinet. I can find a Sente cabinet somewhere around here. So I basically put out a bounty on a Sente cabinet. My friend Dan at first said, oh no, sorry man, I'm not going to sell my mini golf, I love that game, and I offered him enough money where he did sell it. and so yeah, so that worked out pretty well.
How much
did I pay for mini golf and a Sente cabinet?
Yes.
$1,000.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's not that bad.
Yeah, I guess
not terrible.
Yeah. No, that's not bad. I think all my games are at least $1,000 if you want to buy them from me. So
the saving grace is you can switch out mini golf then. Yeah, you don't feel as bad.
Mini golf is actually one of my favorite Sente games now. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we're all gonna have to play it sometime.
It's gone. Okay.
I already played it when Dan had it in his arcade.
We probably all did.
I'm playing a mini golf game in the arcade. Why am I doing this?
You could. You get to pick next.
I get to pick. I can all make you play mini golf. It's a four-player game. I mean, how many four-player classic arcade games are there?
You can make us play what, Eliminator. Goalie Ghost?
Eliminator.
800.
Yeah. So,
sex.
So yeah, thanks to 19, and he's in Baltimore, and I have another friend, Randy Watson in Baltimore. So I talked to him, I'm like, hey,
Randy,
you know,
Snacks and Jackson.
Yeah, I said, hey, do you know this guy? Because I was going to ship
the box.
I was going to ship the whole game over here, and you know how we were talking about how it's a good idea just to send random people money that you don't know, but. I actually vetted him because I knew someone in his neighborhood.
And you said, what's in the box?
But then it didn't really matter because he was just sending me a kit anyhow. And it was a very nice, it was an excellent transaction. So buy stuff from 19. He's a great guy.
Do you vouch for him?
I vouch for him, yeah. So 19, go ahead and just spout off like all sorts of titles with huge prices and let the money roll in and then tell them all to fuck off.
Yeah. As real as they come.
Yeah. Fuck off. You'll get a claim number. Anyhow, coins up.
You already said that.
Who's next?
I want you to go next. I'm curious what you're going to say.
Okay. I'm coins up. Pretty straightforward. I agree with everything said so far. I think the graphics are really good. I like the sound. Gameplay is pretty good. I have enjoyed playing this on the dedicated cabinet. I was on the fence when I only played it in MAME, but playing it on the real cabinet is a lot more fun than playing it in MAME. I appreciate, you know, I think the problem with games once you get into like the 90s is that they really settled into set genres. You have your light gun rail shooters, you have your driving games, you have your puzzle games, fighting games. They're all like different takes on the same basic idea. But what game is like this? Can you name a single game that's even remotely fucking like this?
Jax.
Arcade game, video game. You know, it is a very unique concept, and I appreciate that so many completely off the wall whack ass ideas got made into entertaining and fun games in the golden age and a little bit beyond as we are with this one. That's a thing that I miss about
games these days. You know, Raw Thrills is still around, and, you know, Eugene Jarvis and whatever, but all the games are the fucking same. They're all the fucking same. There is no goddamn difference. It's just like, let's license some new Fast and Furious IP and reskin some shit and make the most hideous cabinet we can imagine. The worst goddamn cabinet known to mankind, and sell it.
That's
and
because it, nothing, no one will play anything else. It's a problem. So,
and it sucks dog shit through a hose. So I like this game. I like games that are weird and unique and rare because they suck. And I don't think this game is super sucky. It's a little sucky, but it's fun. I enjoy playing it. I enjoy playing it on the real cabinet with the real controls. And, you know, you might not think a trackball is that big of a deal, but I don't know, something about it just works. I do have to ding it a little bit because I don't think the controls are dialed in very well. I think the controls feel, I can't put my finger on what it is, but maybe it's like as you're stretching your neck, you kind of like have to use more force to move around or something like that.
That's what I was talking about.
I keep feeling like I can't get into the corners when there's something in there. I always end up getting fucked. And I don't enjoy that aspect of it. There's something about the controls that are not 100%. But overall, I am coins up.
My problem with the control is on the other end, like the little delicate part, I think isn't delicate enough for some reason. Sometimes it seems like I don't have enough control on the back end, but enough about me.
What do you mean the back end?
When you're back at your body.
In the center.
Yeah, because you're
in the center.
It's tighter, man.
That's where I have a little harder time, like flailing about the periphery of the screen. I feel pretty good about that, but yeah, it's the little tiny, I feel like sometimes I'm moving the ball and it's not doing anything.
It's because he's like, can I stretch my neck? Oh, shit, I can. And so he's like, oh, yeah, I can do this. Yeah, woo!
I don't know. One weird thing about hardware is it's a normal trackball that any other game has, but then there's a board in between that goes in between this. Yeah.
What?
There's a like a decoder board because I assume the hardware is, you know, for joysticks or whatever.
Oh, okay,
and then so when you have a trackball control panel, then they just put the encoder stuff on the control panel. So it's like kind of bolted to the trackball.
Jesus.
I don't think that makes it bad. I think that's just normal hardware that would be on a trackball game. But if you're playing Hat Trick, why would you have that hardware?
Sure. Same as the G80 system. You know, you got an extra board to run the trackball or whatever.
Reactor too.
Or the spinner.
Reactor interface board. Mad Planet.
Gottlieb interface board.
Interface.
Yeah, it's just all based on the hardware.
All right. Brandon, let's hear your thoughts.
I like it. I think it kind of has the little bit of a Missile Command syndrome going on where it ramps up pretty quick. And it's kind of overwhelming at first. You don't know what the fuck's going on. Like this, I came down to the barricade and I hit start and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, it's like Jax. I'm like, I haven't played Jax for like ever. I don't know what the fuck does that mean? And, then I kind of started to get it, but then I didn't. Then you added the sneeze thing in, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, that's all right. I know what Ian was saying about there's like that almost like a lag or something when it, I don't know if it's when it starts, when the nose first detaches. And then like all of a sudden you're like let loose. As soon as the nose flies off, you're like, you get more freedom or something like that. But I thought the controls were really, really sensitive. You know, it's like when you jack your mouse pointer sensitivity up and you're like, woo. But then, yeah, when you hit like a pepper or a soap, you get pissed off because it's like, I feel like the one game design mechanic, I know they're just trying to be creative and suck people in because, I mean, who would play this game? But if they had no, there's always enemies, right? There's always like those little accomplice little enemies to make the game interesting, like, you know, like in Domino Man, they had like the fucking surrounding workers based on like where you're at or whatever. But if they didn't have any of that, I think it would have been better. Because imagine if it was just the nose and the food, and you could just, you know, kind of like Tempest, you know, you're just like fucking flying around. Like you can spin the spinner and just fuck around if you want to. There's nothing really stopping you.
I feel like no.
But
what about all the enemies shooting at you?
No, I meant like
no obstacles on the outside.
There's right? No obstacles on the outside. Yeah, it's the same thing as Tempest, okay. Right? Like the enemies are well, I mean, just pretend there was no enemy and the only enemy was your own nose. And the game would have been way better in my mind because it's a game of just Jax or whatever the fuck it is. But I think it would have been like the controls would have been quick, you know, like kind of like Reactor or whatever, or Tempest. And it would have been a little bit more flowy. Like maybe if they would have introduced, you know, like the Pepper guy at like the second day or third day or something like that, or every once in a while at random, something like that would have been funner for me. But it feels a little choppy, you know, like it's not that. Like, you get the freedom of moving around, and then you get restricted, and I think that's kind of annoying.
Well, that's, like, the worst enemy on the game. So once you learn how to, like, deal with the peppers and the soap, then once you learn that that's, like, kind of your number one thing to get those the fuck out of your way, and then you can move freely again.
The worst enemy is your nose, though, because once it flies past you, you're dead. The pepper can... You know, can technically hit you all day long. It doesn't hurt you.
Yeah, but it slows you down, and you only have so much time. I mean, it's a very time based game.
I'm just saying, I don't like that mechanic. I think it'd be better without it. I like the little details, kind of like Chicken Shift, where like the moon is like winking or something like that, and it doesn't really matter, but it is. But you have like the little badge on your lapel.
Yeah,
and no one is ever going to see that unless. You know,
no, like it tells you what, that's actually a function that tells you what course when sixth is the last one.
But
so you totally use that when you're playing the game.
I don't, because it's so small and hectic, it's like it's pointless, but it's cool at the same time. I was just saying, kind of like the moon and Chicken Shift, it's like pointless, who cares? But it's a cool detail.
This one's not pointless, though. It tells you where you are in the course and when you're going to get to the bonus.
The thing I think is... pointless and cute is that when you finish a course, you finish the meal, your badge like smiles, and if you die, then it frowns.
There you go.
I think that's pretty
cute.
I'm
just saying, like, yeah, it's pointless, but it's cool.
It's a detail. Yeah. It shows that they put some care.
There's so much
into
chaos
the game.
On the screen that you never notice it. Like, I didn't really notice it until you pointed it out. I guess that's how, if it was like a big. You know, one of those giant buttons, you know, like the clown buttons. You're a fucking clown. You need a big, big fucking button, not this little tiny
Flavor Flav clock or something. Yeah. Not just this little button with a number on it.
Yeah, how about that? Shit. It's dinner time.
Like, it's cool, but it's detailed, and I appreciate that, but it's like a poorly implemented mechanic.
How about the monkey that deep throats the banana? Though?
That's that's good. That's the best part.
I don't think we've mentioned the monkey until now, but it's at the end of the day, right? Your reward is you're sitting at the table with a banana, and then a monkey, like you would expect to see on an organ grinder, walks up and just deep throats a banana, swallows it whole.
Yeah, it's an organ grinder.
Organ grinder. Yeah.
I
get joke.
That's like your introduction to the bonus level. So once you see that, then you get to go to the bonus
level. Is that everyone, though?
Because it's the bonus level.
It seemed like it only happened once for some reason when I...
Well, that's because that's as far as you guys made it.
Oh, snap! Someone got told.
Yeah, he does it at the end of every day.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the things that could have been a better detail is having that change between, you know, each day. Have the monkey do something different.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to see him do
anything. This time he's going to shove up his ass in the second level. Yeah. Yeah. How's that for a palette swap? The other thing I was going to mention is the bonus levels are really cool. Like, I think the bonus levels are better than the game because kind of, you know.
There's no peppers or soap.
That's true. Yeah.
Yep. That's what you've been waiting for. That's what you wished for.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's more effort put into the bonus levels than there is the game, the core game, because it's like, you know, kind of like mini games. Like, you still have the same mechanic of saving your nose, but then the peanuts are just like, collect peanuts. The baseballs, you just get pegged in the fucking face. But you have to get pegged in the face, and then the juggling one, there's a, you know, there's an order to it. I don't know what was after that. What are,
the first one is just bounce a ball.
You bounce your nose.
Bounce your nose.
It's bounce your nose, then it's juggling. Bounce your
baseball,
nose.
Baseball, then juggling.
Oh, there you go.
And then what?
Then peanuts.
Peanuts.
But then that's it?
Yeah,
that's
you eat everything. Yeah, that's because that's at the end of the midnight snack.
And then it goes over, it starts over again?
Next day.
Next day.
Oh, okay.
Tuesday.
Yeah. I think I enjoyed those most because it was like, oh, cool. Something different.
It's also kind of low stakes because, you know, if you lose, you just end up losing points instead of losing a nose.
Yeah. Usually bonus levels in games are like kind of throwaways, like the zookeeper one's kind of stupid.
It reminds me a little of Havoc in this way that you go through these levels and then you have like the other totally like different, but not really, but yeah, somewhat, you know.
But if you die in those, you die. You don't just move on.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And the music's good. Sound sucks. I enjoyed it. I probably would never own it. I think a lot of the Sente stuff is kind of like the flavor of the month Clav games where, oh shit, everyone let's buy a Sente game and really, really overrated. I don't know what they were thinking at Sente, but like a lot of the games are just kind of not, this is the most innovative game, right? I mean, like we were saying, I think this is like an exception. I'll give the coins up for that. Just to say that there's one good Sente game.
Yeah.
But
unanimous.
It's not that great. Like Ian said, it's kind of, what did you say? It's less sucky.
So I have to make you play Snake Pit next month? Is that right?
Snake Pit's kind of like Indiana Jones, where the concept and the theme is really, really appealing, but I can tell it sucks. Right? Yeah. Kind of like Indiana Jones on System 1.
I think it's way better than Indiana Jones on System 1. But
low bar!
low bar. That's a terrible game.
Yeah. Oh, I got a fun fucking fact. Do you know what SAC stands for?
Go for it. I do know.
Sente Arcade Computer.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not based on the cabinet, it's based on the hardware.
So they did have a SAC 2?
Yeah,
SAC 2.
That had basically a Commodore pet computer inside of it?
Not a pet,
was
no.
Was it a pet or something?
No.
Some kind of Commodore.
I don't know. All I know is the pet came out in like 1977.
Sorry.
And they were not making coin-op games with that in the 80s.
All right.
Sure they were. Name that tune.
Bullshit.
Name
that.
Okay.
Maybe Trivial Fursuit.
That's your Trivial Fursuit. All right, that's your homework, everybody. There is a SAC 2 that never came out that basically had a Commodore computer inside of it.
That's SAC 2.
I mean, that was kind of a surprising thing. The, what was it? Exidy made what was it? It had some terrible name, but it was
FAX?
No. Exidy made a coin-op game that was an Atari 800. No joke. You could get like a Boulder Dash cabinet, but it just played the normal Boulder Dash.
Sorcerer.
No.
That was
their home computer.
Oh, that's their actual computer.
That's their actual computer. They made a cabinet that had an Atari 800 in it. I can't remember the name. Just that it's a really shitty name.
Pet. Exidy Pet. Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a thing because they were like, I guess they wanted to save money on R&D, and so they were just like, we'll license some home games and throw that shit in the cabinet.
Yeah. What was Sente, though? Like, I don't know. It seems like they just spent a bunch of money and just fucked around, because, like, most of the games are just kind of shitty and uninspired. So, yeah. Snacks and Jackson.
Exidy Max Aflex.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
I said it was bad.
Better than the Sackman, which was, we didn't talk about that. The Sackman hardware. Conversion.
That's another, yeah. Yeah, these could have been in the Pac-Man cabinet, the Sackman.
Oh,
yeah.
The Sackman.
Yeah. So that had the same insert would fit in a Pac-Man cabinet. And I wonder, those inserts are a little small, so I wonder if that had something to do with the size of it. But anyhow.
Yeah.
Pretty good idea.
All right. Well, I think that brings our Snacks and Jackson episode to a close. So, like I said, next episode we will be doing feedback, emails, and updates. So if you want to tell us something, give us an update of your own, or tell us what is going on out there in podcast listening land, you can send us a voicemail at
503-766-2263.
Or send us an email at coinrejects@gmail.com, and we will see you next time. So go play some Snacks and Jackson if you can.
There you go.
Go eat some dinner.
Love your local Sente game.
Go deep throat a banana.
No leaving the table until you finish your breakfast.
Bye-bye.